My earliest memories are not of anything specific. They're more like memories of feelings as opposed to events. Feelings of abandonment, feelings of loneliness, feelings of sadness. They say our destiny is formed in these earliest moments, that our fate is determined at this critical juncture. The chosen begin their path towards greatness. The ill-fated are doomed from the beginning. The unfortunate devour themselves, searching for annihilation. You see, we're all prisoners of our own nature, locked into certain patterns of behavior. I could no sooner change the path that I've been placed upon than I could stop a swallow from migrating or a salmon from spawning. So it is written, so it shall come to pass. Quote the raven, nevermore.
Yo, monkeys, it's me. It's DDP. And you monkeys, right now, you're listening to one of the greatest wrestling podcasts of all time. I'm talking about Scheduled for Two Falls with my boys, Kieran and Niall.
This is NXT superstar Dominik Dijakovic, and you're listening to Scheduled for Two Falls with Kieran and Niall.
Hey, this is Ken Shamrock, the world's most dangerous man, and you're listening to Two Falls Podcast with Kieran and Niles. Don't miss it.
Welcome to Scheduled for Two Falls with Kieran and Niles, the wrestling podcast where we break down the industry one topic at a time.
Niall, and welcome back to Scheduled for Two Falls.
Two Falls.
Beautiful. How you doing, Niall?
I'm good, Kieran. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good week for yourself?
Very good week. Short week in the podcast world.
Absolutely. You said it yourself. Niall, we are thrilled to bring our listeners another exclusive Scheduled for Two Falls interview, this time with none other than the hardcore legend.
The Raven. ECW legend.
Two-time ECW champ. We're talking the most decorated champion in WWE history, I think. We're talking the one, the only, Raven.
Quote the Raven, nevermore.
All right, well, without further ado, I think let's get this interview going.
There was an incident at the ECW arena one time where Raven got the idea to crucify Sandman. The whole time I'm doing it, actually, me and Meanie were there, and, you know, Raven's like, yo, tie him up, put the cross up. And I'm there going, oh, this is fucked up, Meanie, this is fucked up. He's like, I know, because Meanie's Catholic, too, so I was like, this is bullshit, man.
This is the most horrifying thing I've ever seen in my life.
And that was the one time in the ECW arena where the fans weren't saying, yo, go to hell and screaming. They were just quiet. You know, Raven had to go back out and apologize to the fans.
Apparently, Todd Gordon and Paul Heyman, by acting without their knowledge, are offended at my use of religious iconography. And apparently, I've offended quite a few people in the audience. Well, you people chose to respect Scott Levy's privacy when I needed a personal time, and so I choose to respect your privacy and your religious beliefs. And so for the people who I deeply offended, I apologize.
For God's sakes, that's Raven. What I earned this U.S. heavyweight belt.
The other remained behind in darkness to create his own flock.
You deserted me, Paige, and I can never forgive you for that.
Jealous of DDP.
What about me? What about Raven?
Raven's a piece of garbage.
At Spring Stampede, who will survive?
There can only be one.
Oh, Raven! Even flow DDT on the alpha male! This is his chance right here! Can Raven climb as you feel the fever in the crowd? Raven heading up the ladder!
He's and so close!
Oh, he's got a long way to go!
Oh, yeah, and look at the Monster Abyss is right there with him! Is Raven going to get it?
Abyss on one side!
Is he going to get
Raven
it?
On the other!
Does he do it? He kicks him off! I don't believe this!
Raven!
Raven!
Has he done it?
It's now the world champ! Raven has talked about his destiny for so long! For 2 years we've heard about the destiny of Raven!
Hello and welcome to Scheduled for Two Falls. We are thrilled to have with us today one of the true icons of 1990s wrestling and beyond, the former two-time ECW World Heavyweight Champion, four-time ECW Tag Team Champion, WCW United States Champion, WCW Tag Team Champion, WCW Light Heavyweight Champion, NWA / TNA World Heavyweight Champion, the 39-time WWE Hardcore Champion, the most decorated champion in WWE history, I think. The one, the only, Raven. You are so welcome to the podcast.
How you doing? How you doing, Ciaran and Niall?
Nailed it. You nailed it. Perfect.
Is my pronunciation perfect?
Perfect.
I don't want to correct you too much.
All right, let's go. So wait. So it's CIA ran. You're a CIA ran operative, yeah. And instead of saying fuck all, it's Niall.
Yeah. There we go. Perfect.
I got called that.
What is it? It's Neil?
Niall.
Niall. Niall.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Old Irish for warrior champion.
So it's really, but it's Neil.
Yeah, that's the English
Neil's
version.
Neil's what it became.
That's what the English did to it.
Right. That's what Buddy Yanks did. Exactly. Wait, I am a Bloody Yank. I forgot. Shit. and how do you pronounce the Ciaran rap?
Kieran.
Saran Wrap.
Kieran,
if the last name was Wrap, that'd be so perfect. Yeah, or it could have been worse than that is if they didn't have Saran Wrap in Ireland, and then you'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, well we don't actually call it Saran Wrap. We call it Clingfilm.
Clingfilm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, Kieran Clingfilm.
In Ireland, do you say aluminium?
Aluminium, exactly.
Why don't you say aluminum?
Because
I was going to ask you, why do you say aluminum? I don't get it.
You botched it.
Yeah, we did. I mean, you guys were first. I was just watching Britannia. I just binged Britannia. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I watched it there.
That was great.
Started lockdown. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. Do you guys still have druids?
Yeah, I've once seen a lot of druids out chanting at a tree. Out in the countryside.
Were they drawing on it? And then like when a little baby one draws something, he goes, I drew it.
I drew it.
No.
Get close enough, to be honest.
Yeah.
Now, I love the way they portrayed the druids as sex-crazed, hypnotic, beatnik / drug dealing, in charge. God dealing with.
I think it was just an excuse for them to like go out to the countryside, take a load of mushrooms, and have sex with their friends' wives.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. Yeah, you know, the first druid was just like, yeah.
I
got this plan. Trees. We'll worship trees. Yeah.
Raven, we're going to deep dive into your career. That's what this podcast is about, and touch upon some.
It's not about Irish history for dumb Yanks.
It has been for the last 5 minutes, but no, I don't think so. I don't want to waste your time talking about that stuff.
I don't mind. You don't want to waste your viewers' time listening to me talk about that?
I'd say we could end up steering the conversation that way again towards the end of this episode.
I just cracked a tooth the other day. I got to get to the dentist.
Oh, I see it there.
Yeah. That's, I don't know what
it was. It must have been eating a rock or something.
I'd say not the first time you've cracked a tooth, given the career you've had.
You were chewing on a tree after some mushrooms, I think, were you?
Yeah, exactly. No, one time I had the whole bottom row of my teeth all loosened up, like Stevie Richards. Like, I went for a backdrop, and he kicked me. And he kicked me with the toe of his foot instead of the flat. And he kicked it and loosened, and the entire bottom row was so loose, like I started wiggling it after. It hurt like a motherfucker. Started wiggling it, and I could feel that I could just pull the teeth out. I mean, I didn't. And then they had to put a stint on it, you know, the whole 5-6 teeth in the front row were all completely loose.
I'm sure it wasn't covered by dental, was it?
No, I got my own, paid for it out of pocket. No, maybe they did. They might have paid for that. I don't know. I don't remember. This is years ago.
Are you still in touch with Stevie?
Yeah, we still talk every once in a while. But he's, for years, he used to say that I hit him. We did a thing where he was going to hook up with when he hooked up with Francine in ECW, and I was jealous. I love that. Raven's jealous of Stevie having a girlfriend. Not that he has a homosexual crush on Stevie, but that that Stevie can't have what he doesn't have. He doesn't have if he didn't have a girlfriend, and Stevie got to be loyal to him only, you know.
Yeah.
Raven didn't want a girlfriend, so Stevie couldn't have one. But anyway, so we did a thing, and we're faced off, and I went to jab at him, like, to make him flinch, but he didn't flinch, and I popped him right in the jaw. Oh. And he's like, and so he got, like, he was really hurt, like, it hurt his feelings, like, when we got to the back, he's like, why'd you punch me, boss? I did it to make you flinch, and I goes, to make you flinch, but you didn't flinch. And all the boys started egging it on, so he got really upset, like, really hurt his feelings. And so then after, you know, he got over it pretty quick, though. But then for years, he held that against me, saying, I owe you a receipt, boss. I owe you a receipt. So when he finally kicked my teeth loose, I was like, okay, now we're even. Except now I owe you one, because yours was twice as brutal as mine was. So we have a running gag on that still.
Have you gotten back yet, or is he still waiting?
No, he's still waiting. It's going to be when he's not expecting it. It's got to be accidental. That's the whole thing is, you know, his was, when I punched him, it was completely accidental. I was like, go, boom. And I expected it. When somebody does that, you go like that, right? Like, to slide out of the way, you know, like, you know what I mean? But he didn't slide out of the way. He just stood there, and so it went bam. And then when he kicked me in the teeth, he didn't mean to kick me in that hard, but when he kicked me, I went for the back job, he's got these size 17 boots, you know, it looks like the letter L. And he kicked me right here, and boom. You know, he's supposed to kick you flat on the chest, you know, with your foot flat like that, not with the toes.
Yeah, but, big boat feet, so they went a few inches too high.
Exactly, the big boat feet.
Very underrated. Stevie, I think he's very underrated.
Amazing talent.
And it's amazing to have a talent like that who, ahead of your debut in ECW, when he changes his gimmicks week on week, you know, he was Stevie the Body, Stevie Polo, Stevie Flamingo. I just thought that was such a cool concept to have some other wrestler, you know, as you're leading into your debut, that he would change his gimmick character for another wrestler's debut. I just don't remember seeing it done before or since. It must have been nice to have somebody like Stevie to do that for you.
Stevie was great. Like I had a story I was going to tell you, but I'll tell you that in a minute. But Stevie was fantastic. He was so talented, so underrated, but we had a lot of issues between us because I'm me and he's him, and we just really clashed. But he always knew that since I was his boss, you know, because I was in. I had, you know, so many more years of experience on him that he had to do it my way. And plus it's my act, you know, so he only ever, I always told him, I said, if in public, I go, if you don't want to do something I tell you in public, just let it go. And when we're in private, we'll discuss it, but never call me out in public because it just doesn't look good. You know, it's poor form, you know, it's why you should never like critique other wrestlers in front of other wrestlers. Like, you know, like you pull them aside and privately, you know, you don't want to embarrass them or humiliate them or, you know, or whatever. There's only one time, and as much as we butted heads, there's only one time he ever got out of line like that. And it was, the, and, He goes, I want him to wear the Baron von Rasky bald bald cap, and him be Baron von Stevie, and a blue meanie be Colonel Demini, or yeah, I think that was what, yeah, Colonel Demini. And Stevie's like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm like, yes, you are. And he starts bowing up in public, right, in the locker room. And I'm like, no, you're doing it. And then he had – the best part of it, though, was because I knew it would get over. It was the funniest act we've ever done. And he was – and he was so – and then when he got to the back, he's like, oh, man, you were so right. I was so wrong, which is why you never argue with the boss in public, because, you know, because you could be 100% wrong and you'll look like a complete idiot. And or you could be right, and then the boss looks like an idiot. So you don't want anybody to look like an idiot. But yeah, he was like, man, I'm so sorry. That was our best act ever. And it was actually the first time I ever broke character on in the ring. So he's wearing the bald skin cap as Baron von Stevie, but it keeps sliding up, so it's coming like it's going to come off, like it's going to fly off. And I'm in the corner sitting there when he comes marching in with the meanie, and I'm in the corner sitting in the corner and I go, I'm trying not to laugh because it's, and Brian Lee was there, who's one of the funniest people I ever met. And he's in the corner and he's standing there leaning on the apron and whispering in my ear going, that's some funny shit, man. Why do that? And so I'm going, so I keep a straight face and I bend my head down and go, and my shoulders would start heaving because I was laughing so hard. And then I'd put my face up.
So Brian Lee is in on the act, trying to get you to corpse as well.
Did he do what?
He's trying to get you to laugh as well, Brian Lee.
Yeah, yeah. So Brian Lee was trying, and it was so hard. It was so hard. Like I was laughing, but I didn't show any. Like, but the boys were in the back, and they there was a stage where the boys were behind a curtain, and so they're all watching the matches from under the curtain, and they all came out to watch. It sold out the curtain, which is a wrestling term. You have a locker room sellout is when all the boys come to the curtain to watch the match because they knew it was going to be funny as shit. And and plus there was the heated exchange in the back. So the boys wanted to see what would happen, you know? Mm,
yeah.
And so he's peeking under the curtain. The boys are all peeking under the curtain and they're like eye level is like right. However, the ring was set up like on a lifts or not or whatever. It was eye level with me. So they could see me bend over and go, and then and so the boys, so it became a running gag that when anybody would laugh, their shoulders would heave like up and down. But now I told you that Stevie story to tell you the other one. The funniest thing he's ever said, and then we can stop talking about Stevie unless you want to keep talking about him.
No,
but the funniest thing he ever said was one time, remember when Sting had the vulture?
Yeah.
And he wanted to do a promo, and I'm so pissed we never got to do it, where he goes, hey, boss. Sting's got a duck. How come we ain't got a duck? How funny is that, a duck? How come we ain't got a duck?
That would have been a great promo.
Are you keeping up?
Awesome. I would have cracked up on that.
Are you keeping up with the products that are out there at the moment? Have you seen Sting's recent return?
No, I you know what? I don't watch anything. I haven't watched wrestling in 20 years other than I started watching AEW when it started. But I'm a completist. If I watch wrestling, I got to watch everything, and it's just too much of it. And you know, and I've seen it all, done it all. Plus, it makes me sad because I'm not doing it. You know, and so why be sad for no reason? You know what I mean? I'm happy for the boys, and I kind of follow the business. Like I have an idea what goes on. You know, and it like have somebody send me in for like a little report on what happened in the wrestling week or whatever. But you know, but for the most part, no, I really, I don't watch it. Like if you put half the names in front of me, like I wouldn't even like new people. I would trip over them. I wouldn't even know who they were. Like I wouldn't even know them.
Yeah.
But I did. What did I see? I saw because I had to do a voice, like I got paid to do a comedy, like with some stand-up comedians to do like a commentary on like the, I think WrestleMania or something. I think part of WrestleMania. So we watched, you know, like a bunch, I didn't stay for the whole thing, but we watched a bunch of them and raised money for charity and raised money for our own pockets too. So I got an idea. So some of the people who I'd read about, but I'd never seen, and now I was like, oh, that's who that is. You know, because you get a picture in your mind's eye what somebody's going to look like, and you're like, oh, so that's what they look like, huh?
Well, you give so much of your life to something for years and years, and then when it ends, a lot of the time you just want to try new stuff, like, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, hanging around.
Plus, there's so much good stuff, to, you know, on TV, on Netflix, you know? Like, I mean, you know, I'm a TV whore. I could sit in front of a couch, sit on a couch and watch TV for, you know, for a week straight if I had to. You know, if I was on a desert island, I'd just want a couch and a TV.
Yeah, I feel that.
And I want good cable, too, and good streaming. On a deserted island.
Good Wi-Fi on your desert island.
Exactly. You got to have good Wi-Fi on a desert island.
You said something there a while ago about breaking character. Myself and Kieran used to do a little bit of work as actors when we were a little bit younger and stuff.
Did you do plays or?
Yeah, mostly stage stuff. And
okay, can I have a question? Is it weird? Is it boring doing the same thing every night?
I think it's more boring sitting on a set for like a TV show or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Because like same thing every night. It's like, I don't know. It's probably like doing a house show match or something with the same guy. Where?
But that at least changes like every week or every, you know, so and so. You know. Tell you why I ask is like when I have to do like when I was in WWE, you do the same match with the same person for like a week or two or whatever. And it would get boring after a few days, you know what I mean? Because, you know, so you try and mix it up and throw different stuff in. But if you get a guy who doesn't want to do different stuff, he just wants to keep it set, you know, it's boring. And I do stand-up comedy, too. And I remember, like, I did three nights somewhere, and by the third night, I was like, I'm tired of reading this material, you know?
Yeah. I just thought, though, for me, it was like the audience react to different parts every night. And then you're there on the spot trying to figure out what kind of audience do we have in front of me. So...
Well, yeah, but do they? But why would they respond at different spots? Like, why wouldn't they respond for all? Like, aren't the high spots all booked into built into the whole play?
Yeah, yeah. Like the high spots, you'll always get the same reaction. But then, out of nowhere, you say something you don't even mean for it to be funny or whatever, and you hear one dude in the corner of the audience laughing by himself, right. And you're like, "What's going on here?" You know, and it kind of changes the energy of what's happening on stage.
Yeah, I've thought about doing a play before, but I don't know if I have the energy to devote, you know, that much work to memorizing the script and the rehearsals, you know, and to then to perform the same thing night after night after night after night after night, you know. But by the same token, I don't know if I don't, but I do know I'm not a rehearsal person because that's why I love wrestling. We don't rehearse.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I always wondered, like, why do bands have to rehearse so much? I mean, they all know how to play and they all know the song. Can't they just play the song? Like, you know, we don't rehearse. We just go out. We just, like, basically, we just write it. We plot out the action, and we perform it. You know what I mean? And if there's promos, you plot out the script and you perform it. But we don't rehearse. I mean, and granted, sometimes it looks like we don't rehearse at all. But for the most part, you know, you can't tell. And I never understood why there's so much rehearsal for, you know.
I think it's just very easy to forget. If you fall apart in the middle of a match, you can probably pick it up again somewhere along the way. But in a play, you're telling a story. So if you miss out an integral chunk of the plot, it can be very difficult for the audience to...
Oh, no, a play I kind of get. I kind of get a play.
But I do get you with the band, like. But again, a lot of bands, to be together for years.
Well, that's the problem. They have so many songs, they start forgetting them. I'd just say it's a human
thing.
Yeah,
but I'm saying, once they all they got to do is put the line, the song notes in front of them, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like, why, I never understand why, like, a band, you can't, like, you know, like, I'll give you an example. Like, on those Rock and Roll Hall of Fames, you know, deals, they always have, like, you know, at the end, they have a bunch of people who never played together play together. And they rehearse like once or twice because that's all they're going to get out of them. And it comes off great. And I'm like, why can't other people do that? But, you know, it's like, I think they've been trained, like the mindset's been shoved into their head that you have to rehearse, 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 rehearse. But if you all know the song and you all know how it goes, you know.
You're clearly not a guy who went through each and every moment of your matches ahead of time with your opponent. You've called it.
No,
all
I have, but I have done that. I've done that many a time, you know.
And you called it in the ring a lot, I'd say, did you?
Yeah, but I mean, but not on TV stuff. TV stuff, you pretty much set up exactly, you know, and pay-per-views. The house shows you call, you know, but here's the thing. That's why there's a skill to this because – you know, anybody can, any, like, what, okay, like, a great example is, And why you have to learn to call it in the ring, even though, let's face it, if you call it in the ring, generally the match is not going to be as good as if you set it up ahead of time. Mm-hmm. No matter how much old-timers say it was, it generally isn't. But the skill you need to be able to call it in the ring is unquestionably hugely important because, okay, for example, I was in TNA and Kazarian and AJ had a match, and both incredible talents. And they were the main event for the light heavyweight or the X Division title. AJ was the babyface champion. Kazarian was the heel, and AJ was supposed to win with the tumbleweed or something. Or whatever it is. And so he hits it. So they go like 17 minutes or something, 20 minutes here, maybe longer. I don't know. He hits the move, but he misses Kazarian completely. So they both go like, okay, we're kicking out. We're kicking out. The ref didn't catch him saying that. And the ref counted three, even though he kicked out at 2.5. And then so AJ, they handed AJ the belt. Now he's all pissed off, which first of all, and I'm not, this is not to denigrate AJ. Actually, it puts him over in the end, but, AJ had never called a match in the ring. At that point in his career, all he'd ever done is called and set it up in the back. And same with Frankie, same with Kazarian. So when that happened, AJ was pissed off, which first of all, never be pissed off at the match when you've won because the people don't know you've messed up the match, you know, and you never know. And even if you mess up the match completely, generally the fans can't tell unless you're really bad. And so why let them know that you're upset when you're supposed to be happy that you won? It just shows it's a work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And secondly, if something's that glaring a mistake, like when a ref counting three and he kicked out, you never know if the camera missed it. It depends what camera angle. I've had matches that I thought were amazing, watched them back and they were shit because of the camera work. And I've had matches that were shit, but looked amazing because of the camera work, you know? So it all depends.
I wasn't working with AJ in TNA.
Oh, it's great.
Where does he rank for you?
Oh, he's. I love working with AJ. But let me continue to track, and I'll get to that. I'm heading to that. So after the match, I pulled him aside, and I said, you know, so it was the last match on the show. So we go off the air, and AJ's going, shit, piss, cocksucker, motherfucker. You know, he's cussing, you know, and he's not happy he won, you know, he won the title. Because Frankie was the champion, and he won the title. He's not even happy he won. And it's just a horrible way to go off the show, you know, 2-hour show, and it closes with it's a fantastic match, but the finish was because of what their reaction after the finish, it went from a 4-star match to a dud, you know, instantly. Mm-hmm. So I told him, I said, listen, have you guys ever called anything into the ring before? And he goes, no. I go, here's why the skill's important, because if you have called in, if you're used to calling stuff in the ring, when something messes up, it's not even a problem. You just go, okay, let's do this. Let's do that. You just call it in the ring and fix it. Like, and what AJ should have done was AJ should have said when he got the ref handed him the belt, said, listen, he kicked out. I'm a baby face. Well, not say I'm a baby face, but you know, I'm a good guy. He kicked out at 2.5. I don't want to win the belt that way. Let's restart the match. Bing, bang, boom. Styles clash 1, 2, 3. Yay. People would have thought that was actually the built-in finish. They would have thought the mistake was for real. Which is why you always hide, is why you never cop to mistakes to the audience. Frankie should have said, since AJ didn't, he should have said, hey, ref, I kicked out, asked the people. The people would have had to say, yeah, he did kick out, restart the match. He clubs AJ from behind, shoots him in, reverse, Styles clash 1, 2, 3. AJ still wins. The people think it's part of the show. They think it makes it a great finish. Makes it an even better finish, actually. And that's why two things from that, or maybe more than two things, but. One is, that's why AJ and Frankie learned that day that they have to be able to call stuff in the ring. No matter how good you think you are or how good people the sheets say you are, you're not that good until you can call shit in the ring because when shit fucks up, you're lost. AJ never – I'm Frankie both, they never fucked up again. You know what I mean? Like that became – you know, and AJ – why I like that story so much is AJ is the easiest person to train. Like, not that I ever trained him, but I've taught him, you know, I've given him ideas, concepts, taught him stuff, and nobody picks it up quicker. Like, he's amazing. Like, you'll tell him something, like you tell somebody something, how to do something, and because they haven't done it before, they have to process it in their brain, then they have to get their body to do it, so they have to get their body to do it the right way, not so it doesn't look clumsy or awkward, then they have to get the whole thing together so it just works. And AJ, you could tell him something before a match, instantly he would do it perfectly in the ring. Like, it's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. And so they both learned a lesson that day. And it was a valuable lesson, you know, that it was well worth it for both their careers. And so you have to learn, to call in the ring. And it's also why calling matches in the ring, you can come up with stuff that is so good and clever and stuff you never would have thought of that makes the match better. But all in all, if you want to pick a match, if you want to set it up ahead of time, you probably have a better match if you set it up ahead of time, most 7 out of 10 times by setting it up in the back, because you can really plot it out and make long-term plotting and, you know, and strategize, you know, and have spots that go from here to here to here. Whereas if you're calling them in the ring, you can only call so much at a time, you know, without the fans saying, hey, he's reading a book to him, you know?
You've had two of the, probably of the whole 90s, definitely you've had two of the best feuds of the 90s with Dreamer and Sandman. Mm-hmm. Like, how much of that was like maybe creative input from Heyman, or how much of that was like, say, between you and Dreamer?
It was a combination of all three of us. I'd come up with an idea, Dreamer would come up with an idea, Paul would come up with an idea. The best part though was that Dreamer so respected me. And he also knew I had seniority, and he had so much respect for the way the chain of command of the business, that if I had an idea that he didn't think, that him and Paulie didn't think were good, he would back me anyway. Like, he would always back me, because if it fucked up, if it was terrible, I'd always admit that, yeah, I fucked up, it was a dumb idea after all. So I always admitted to it, you know. So I didn't just be like, you know. So he knew that at least I would take the, and I would take the heat for it too. I would say that was my fault, it was my idea, it was dumb, you know, which rarely ever happened. But Dreamer was great about that, you know. But he'd come up with ideas. He's really clever, really brilliant. Paulie's a genius. Paulie's like a wrestling savant. I mean, he's just amazing. The idea you liked about Stevie having the different names to come in to, you know, to bring me in, that was Paulie's idea. He also had me get a hold with Stevie Sue earlier and give him some of my ring attire, like a singlet and a Scotty Flamingo ring jacket, so that he could come out wearing my merch, you know, wearing my, not merch, my costumes, you know, to even make more of a point with it. So yeah, Paulie was the best person I ever had to collaborate with of my whole career, other than the grappler. And the grappler in Portland, I learned so much. That's where I really learned how to work, is in Portland with the grappler. But that's another story. But you just have to ask me one question. I'll just go on forever. But you asked me about working with AJ. I never got to that, which I do want to say. So working with AJ, AJ's amazingly talented, as I've already said. But but he was still learning the business at that point. You know, even though the Sheets thought he was the greatest worker ever, he wasn't. He became one of the greatest workers ever, but he wasn't at that point. But who is at that point? But, you know, but the Sheets thought he was, because he did the most high spots and the best high spots most fluidly, you know, which is not a way to, you know, like if you watch a movie of all high spots does not ever win any awards. It is never, it's never considered a good movie. You know, it's just, it's car crash. It's all nonstop action. Yet in wrestling, when there's no plotting and there's all nonstop action, the critics love it. So some of the critics have to be wrong somewhere, but that's neither here nor there. So I'm working with AJ, and I'm the baby face. He's the heel. And he goes, because I'm not going to do any athletic stuff because I don't want to show you up. I was like, yeah, you bastard. I go, you old bastard. I go, you have to do your stuff, because why? It wouldn't make any sense for you not to. He goes, yeah, but I'm just going to make you look bad, and then I'll end up looking like the baby face. I go, no, you won't, because if you know how to work, there's an art form to this, and that's what I taught him that day, and he learned it, as I said, he learned everything perfectly. So I go, for example, I go, let's do this spot. I go, I'll shoot you off. I'll go for the drop to hold on the chair. You jump, you step through so I don't trap your legs to make you fall in the chair, and you jump up onto the chair, then jump onto the top rope, like, you know, Sabu does. I go, and then when you come back to hit me with something, I'll collapse the chair and throw it in your face. So I win the spot, right? He shows all the athleticism, but I win the spot. That's the art of me. And that's how you make a heel. That's how you allow a heel to get all his cool stuff in. But you have to do it so it backfires occasionally. Yeah. You know, and when it backfires, that makes the babyface look twice as smart because he caused the backfire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's just one aspect of knowledge that takes years to acquire. And now AJ's, you know, I mean, he is phenomenal. I mean, you know, no pun, no joke intended. I'm saying he really is phenomenal. That's one of the few names that actually nails it perfectly. He's so athletic. He's so graceful. And yet he's so physical, you know, because a lot of the guys who do high spots, they are just high spot guys, don't like, they run the ropes really slow so they can make sure their timing's right. They look like they're dancing, not fighting. AJ always looks like he's in a fight, you know.
Yeah.
His stuff looks mean, it looks rough, it's snug, you know, it's tight. Go ahead.
You mentioned there the art of winning the spot, like how important that is for the storytelling of the match. And I suppose there's a bit of criticism currently about maybe modern wrestling, and maybe it's all just high spots, and some people love that and some people hate that. AEW currently, I know you said you're not totally up with the product, but maybe you might be aware of how many old school managers they've kind of brought in. They've brought in a lot of guys from your era who are there, who are kind of maybe balancing that a little bit. Is that something that might interest you, managing as a kind of managerial role? I just think your character just would be absolutely perfect.
Not until COVID's over, or until the vaccines, you know, spread out more, because I got pre-existing conditions. I've had a heart attack. I've got type 2 diabetes. So I don't want to take a chance. I mean, it's great that Jake's out there, you know, but I feel like, man, he's really rolling the dice. But, you know, I mean, God bless him. I mean, I hope he stays safe. You know, I really do. I love Jake. You know, he's one of my heroes. One of the guys I stole so much from Jake, you know, into my act. But yeah, he's got a lot of, I mean, that takes chutzpah to, you know, cause he's got to, he's, I'm 56 and he's older than me. So, you know, good for him though. You know, I'm glad they're using him. I mean, it's so smart of Cody to bring in old school guys like that, because especially guys that can talk.
Like
I always used to hate when they'd bring in a manager, like an old school guy. I like the fact they would give him a job, but if he couldn't talk that well, then what's the point? You know what I mean? If he was just there to get a paycheck, which I have no problem with giving a guy a paycheck. Like, I've gotten more of my friends' jobs than I can count, but I never got them jobs higher than the spot that they could deserve. Like the Blue Meanie, like I got him, I gave him the gimmick, got him the job, but I never tried to get him up on the top of the card. You know, he fit as the Blue Meanie as a sidecar act. You know what I mean? You know, so I have no problem with nepotism, because as long as the nepotism is, or frienditism, whatever it's called when you do it for friends. So I have no problem with that, you know, like, but you just have to keep it at a level that they're qualified for.
Yeah. It's got to make sense.
It has to make sense.
Yeah.
So I like the old school back in the day. That's why I never got why I had to add some of those managers, because I didn't think they were very good talkers. And I was just like,
Yeah, because what I like is that they're pairing up, like, Jake, unbelievable talker, with guys who need a talker.
Right.
That's why we were thinking Raven, unbelievable on the mic, would be an awesome mic man for a younger guy who hasn't got those skills yet, you know?
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Yeah, I'd love to, but not till COVID clears up somewhat, you know what I mean? I don't want to take a chance.
And we can finally find out who has a better DDT, Jake or Raven.
Well, here's the thing. The key to the DDT, the real key that nobody realizes, is the guy has to go face first. If he does a somersault, I was going through my social media the other day, and somebody tweeted a DDT by this girl, said it was almost as good as mine or whatever, so I just took a look at it, and it was amazing. She looked great, except that the girl she hit it on, the girl did one of those somersaults, and that takes away all the impact. And of course, that's even more dangerous anyway. That's a more dangerous way to land for real, even though it doesn't look like it, because you could hurt your neck. Whereas if you take a face bump, you can't hurt yourself. So by appearances, the face plant looks brutal, and the somersault it looks like shit.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody takes a somersault for some reason. So I realized long ago that, you know, the key is that they have to go flat like a pancake. And also the other key is, and I was lazy a lot of times, I didn't do it, but most of the time when I did do it, when I did it right, when I did my best DDTs, is you got the guy like this, and then you kick your feet out to a 90-degree angle, and so it drops you as fast as you can to your back. And so by going to a 90-degree angle, it gives the illusion of even more speed and more torque, because the torque would be, you know, as you're rotating. And that's why now they do the DDT where they take a half a step back and kick their foot out and kick their foot forward, I mean, and then drop. But you can avoid all that and look prettier doing it. And, you know, and also can do it faster, but you just have to kick your feet out, boom, so you're alleged like that. That's how most people land doing it. But if you kick it like that, it's like you're like this, and you're like boom. Yeah. And it looks more sudden, and it's the suddenness that gives the illusion of pain.
Because to the WWE audience, when you made your re-debut, I suppose your second run with the World Wrestling Federation, that DDT that you delivered when you interrupted the Taz versus Jerry Lawler match was so impactful because it was so different to the standard DDT that they were doing. And I just remember thinking that was an awesome DDT. Kind of reminded me of Mick Foley's double arm DDT, but you're right, it was the flat face hitting the ground that made it so different. But could I ask you,
But let me tell you, the person who took it best was Canyon.
Really?
Nobody took it better because Canyon
strike
himself. Who better than Canyon? But he did take it perfectly because he would spike. Okay. So he would spike himself like this at that angle. Now, RVD takes it straight down and bounces on his head, which is amazing. But then he ends up falling over, so it's not quite as good. But Canyon would take it, spike, and he would stay there like a lawn dart.
Yeah.
For like 3-4 seconds. That's what made his so amazing, was he would go flat, except he would go in the, like he was going flat. You know, there's his head, here's his feet. So he'd go boom and spike like a lawn dart, and then eventually he would just collapse, you know, down flat. But it looked like even more force was pulled on his head that way.
And another exceptionally underrated talent, Canyon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just back to that moment, though, that pop when you delivered that DDT, like, it was one of the biggest pops, I think, of the whole Attitude Era. It was just absolutely incredible.
I don't know about that.
I rewatched it recently. It's a humongous pop. Yeah. How was that WWE run pitched to you, you know, compared to what it ended up being, you know, for you to make the decision to cross the divide?
Me and Paulie were having issues, and I'd done what I could do there, and I just wanted to be on a bigger stage, you know. So they didn't promise me anything, you know. They just said, look, other than that, they knew I just got clean. So they're like, look, you know, we'll give you an opportunity. That's all they promise anybody, is an opportunity, you know. Well, at least that's all they did promise people back then. And it just, the opportunity just didn't work out for
well-known
reasons, I think.
They didn't run. So, like, the interruption on the Taz Jerry Lawler match, like, had they given any long term plan on it? It was just like, go out there, do what you do, try get over.
I think they liked the idea of me and Taz as a tag team, so they had me come out and help Taz and do that for a little bit, and then I don't know. It's lost in the murky mists of time. Yeah.
39 hardcore title rounds later, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
Yep. So I was thinking of another thing you said earlier. Speaking to you is just mad, because I had like a lot of questions, but you give us so many ideas. You were talking about like the importance of camera work, you know? And I was watching NXT a few weeks ago, and there was a chair shot, and it looked almost as good as the Dreamer chair shot on you.
Oh, the chair shot around the world?
Yeah. And then they go and show a replay, and it's clear that there was no contact. Like, they shouldn't have shown the replay, you know? But,
That's like, weird, because WWE is usually really good, or at least they used to be fantastic about not showing shit stuff.
Yeah, I think they're kind of slipping up on it again recently, because there was like a DDT spot as well on the ramp, and you could hear the smack off metal, and it looked good initially, and then they showed a slow-mo replay where I can see there's like 2 feet of space between the guy's head and the ramp. Wow. But like,
that's a shame. That's how rotten camera work can screw up a great thing, or it can, but it can also make a terrible thing look great though. So, I mean, you know, they're doing the cameraman. It's not the cameraman, actually. It's the producer or the director in the truck picking the shots, you know? So it's, But look, they got to cover everything. It's a thankless job, and you know, and they get no credit. But you know, it's a really hard job, and they're doing their best. I mean, for the most part, they do fantastic work. You know, the people behind the scenes.
Because you've worked in every part of wrestling. You know, you've been producer, and you're producer for Raw, and what was it, Sunday Night Heat, maybe, or
associate producer of Raw. I wrote the second run shows back when I was Johnny Polo, All American at Mania. I was being groomed to be on the booking committee numerous times.
Hosted Primetime Wrestling with Gorilla Monsoon. Am I right in that?
Right, Uncle Gorilla.
How was that?
But that was a lot of fun, but it wasn't what I wanted to be doing, which is why I quit.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to, because they were going to, they get, at that point, I didn't even, you know, it's not that I had any problem with Johnny Polo. I think I did a great job with the character. I think I made him funny as hell, but it's not what I wanted to be or do. Mm-hmm. And it's not who I, it's just not me. And one day Vince comes up to me, he goes, you know, I'm sensing a disconnect between, you know, when I watch you, you're really not Johnny Polo. I never was. I go, Shane McMahon should have been Johnny Polo. Now that's the perfect guy to play the character. I just played him, you know, as Scotty Flamingo or Scotty the Body, you know, or I just played him as a funny guy who happened to, you know, be the thing. But my speech pattern is not Connecticut. It's not well bred. My speech pattern, you know, sounds like a thug. You know, I don't sound or look like that. And so Vince goes, I'm going to take you off the air and just have you produce. And that's when I realized I was going to have to quit, because I didn't want to be a producer. I didn't get in wrestling to be a producer. So it's really hard, man, starting over again after, you know, 4 or 5 years in the business and going back to the basics. But it all worked out really well. I'm really, really lucky, really grateful.
You mentioned Shane McMahon there. Is it exaggerated that Vince was uncomfortable with your relationship with Shane and the partying that you were doing, or is that?
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. Me and Shane used to be really tight. You know, we drifted apart, but I had him out all, you know, he'd go out with me every night, you know, not every night, because, you know, he couldn't, but yeah, that was all true. Big heat with Vince and Linda over it. And the funny thing is the boys were thinking that I was, you know, kissing Shane's ass. And trying to help my career, but I wasn't. I was actually killing my career because it was getting me heat. You know.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Shane was 26 at the time, so it's not like he was a 17-year-old teenager getting in trouble with his dad. So it's funny to think of the two.
Was he 20? I think he was younger than 26, because I was only like, I think that's what. Let's see, I was 93. I was 29. Yeah, he was like 22 or something, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Still.
He's still an adult.
Yeah. but you know, he's working for his dad's company, being groomed to own, to take over the company. You know, it's not what, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you know, nobody wants their kid out till 5 a.m. every night.
Any stories?
I mean, Do you have kids?
I have one. Yeah, a little girl.
You don't want your kid out till 5 a.m, do you?
Not unless she's hanging around with Shane McMahon.
What's that?
If she's hanging around with Shane McMahon, I might be okay with it for a little bit.
Okay.
Then, Raven, you got to, like, because you're doing this, you know, you went through your kind of phase of different characters, Johnny Polo, and then you go to Raven, which is like the complete opposite character. And obviously you would, like, really went through a process there of building that character, because by the time you even arrive in ECW, that character is fully formed and realized. What was the inspiration and the process behind creating, like, the character that would serve you the rest of your career?
Well, it wasn't fully formed and realized yet, believe it or not. I had put a lot of work and a lot of thought into it. What it was is I like being a chicken shit heel. You know, I'd like, you know, like Scotty the Body, Scotty Flamingo, you know, was just Scotty the Body, but with a surfer twist that Dusty put in it. But I like being a chicken shit heel, you know, and I thought there was good money in it. But nobody was, at that point in the business, nobody wanted a chicken shit heel. And DDP said to me one day, he goes, nobody's buying a chicken shit heel. You're going to have to play a tough guy. I was like, yeah, but I go, you know, I may be tough in the real world, but I'm not tough in the wrestling world. You know, I'm way down on the totem pole for tough guys. This business is full of tough guys, you know. Mm-hmm. And to me, I always thought it was boring, just a tough guy who just kicked ass, you know, and ran people over. I didn't think there was any, you know, drama in that, because nobody ever sold. Tough guys don't sell. And without selling, then there's no drama. You know, and that's why the Road Warriors always had to turn babyface, because they would just come in and just kick everybody's ass and they wouldn't sell. And then, so how do you not like that? You have to cheer for it. You know what I mean? So it turns you babyface. So, but Paige had a good point. I was like, you're right. If nobody's going to buy me as a chicken shit, then I'm going to have to be a tough guy then. And it's not like, you know, I was like, you know, I used to be a bouncer. You know, I was relatively tough for the real world. You know, I mean, not like today, not like an MMA fighter type tough, but a barroom tough, you know? So it's not like it's something that was completely, opposite for me. It's just something that I had more fun being a chicken shit. And in this business, you know, I looked at the Steiners. They're tough guys. You know what I mean? Like, they're real badasses. You get the point. Anyway, so I decided I'm going to make him a character that gets over not by kicking ass, but by having his ass kicked and keep getting up. Like, I realized that that's really the toughest guy. The toughest guy is the guy who gets his ass kicked, gets up again, kick his ass, he gets up again, and finally you blow up fighting him, and then he kicks your ass. You know, and more importantly, in wrestling, I knew I needed an entourage. You know, I needed a flunky, and have the flunky, you know, allow me to win. So I would take the ass kick and show how tough I was, and keep taking. Which is also why fans started to like me. But I always did. I always showed my ass. I always did something despicable to lose the people that were cheering me. I mean, there's always 10% that are going to cheer the heels no matter what, but. You know, but the people, you know, it's like people start to realize how tough your character is. Like, eventually they realized how tough Stevie was. Like, Stevie used to get his ass kicked and they'd make fun of him. The audience was so cruel to Stevie in ECW. But eventually he took so many ass beatings that people were like, this kid's kind of tough. He's not a clueless putz. You know what I mean? And they started to respect the clueless putz work and started to cheer him. So we had to turn, so they turned him babyface. You know what I mean? But they started to... If you do something well enough, people start to respect it, even if it's as a bad guy. You know, like being a bad guy, if you're good enough at a bad guy, they're going to cheer you for it. So you have to do something to show your ass, you know, to show that you're not deserving of that. And so that's what I always did. But to put a finer point on it, I put the character together. DDP gave me – the best advice I got was he goes, you need to go alternative. You know, he goes, look, that's what you are anyway. You know, you wear a leather jacket and Doc Martens, you know. He didn't say that, but he basically pointed out that, you know, I have long hair. I was like one of the first people to grow my hair out from the mullet era. So it was long all the way around as opposed to a mullet. And, you know, and I had tattoos, leather jacket. He's like, that's who you are. You know, that's who you need to do. Or, you know, you do something along that. And then I just started putting it all together. And then one day I was trying to come up with a name. And I was trying to think of what's similar to this. What can I use as an inspiration? And I go, the Crow's similar, but it's the Eric Draven. What's the character's name? Eric Draven. Draven. Raven. Quote the Raven, nevermore. Boom. I had a name and a catchphrase instantly. That's how fast it came to me. And then just as fast, I was sitting the same day, same time frame, same period. I was like, I need an outfit. And I was like, let me think. Well, I need shorts, long shorts. That's the fit. That's the look. You know, but the shorts to your knees, because that now everybody wears shorts like that. But back then, you know, only the you know, the miscreants did. You know, the people I was trying to emulate. You know, trying to be. You know, the not that event. Well, eventually the character became me. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
But I was that character anyway, and I already wore shorts like that. So I was like, I need to get a pair. So I pulled out a pair of gym. I knew I couldn't wear wrestling trunks or tights because it wouldn't fit the character. And so I pulled out a pair of shorts that were that long. And I was like, no, that's not it. So and I grabbed a pair. I go, jean shorts. Yeah, I need some jeans in this. So, you know, because the material speaks to, a working man, that kind of thing. So I got some jean shorts. They were already, you know, cut to that length anyway. And I just frayed them and cut a couple holes in them, you know. And jean shorts, perfect. Okay, now what do I need? I'll put a wrestling sole on my Doc Martens, which I never liked Doc Martens. They were always the most uncomfortable shoe I ever had, believe it or not. I must have had the one pair of Doc Martens that were completely uncomfortable because they were miserable to wear. But So I put a wrestling sole on, and they were still miserable to wear, even with a soft wrestling sole. And then so I go, I'll put a wrestling sole on that. I go, I need a ring jacket. Got to have a ring jacket. Go, a leather jacket. I just pulled my leather jacket out of the closet. This is perfect. I'll wear this. Luckily, it was a lightweight one. So, you know, I didn't melt under the heat lamps, you know what I mean, at the arena. So I pulled that out of the closet. And then I go, we need some flannel in this because that was the era of grunge. So I need to represent with some flannel. And so I got a flannel T-shirt and, a flannel shirt and buttoned it up and cut the sleeves off. And I was like, nah, I look like Big Josh. Remember Big Josh, Matt Bourne?
Yeah.
So I look like Big Josh. I was like, nah, I don't want to be the Big Josh. So I was like, all right. So I go, oh, I'll tie it around my waist. So I took one of my flannel shirts, tied it around my waist. So basically I'm just pulling the whole outfit out of my closet. And then I go, my best asset, because you have to accentuate your positives and you highlight the positives and hide the weaknesses. So part of the reason, like I had great legs. It's like my best body part at the time. But, no, it was. I had great legs. But I had unfortunately, I needed to cover them for the character. You know what I mean? Like, showing my legs wouldn't have helped. So even though I had to hide the strength, but it was more of a strength in another way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that's how you have to pick and choose. You have to figure out what works best for your build. So I knew with my build that I always had a thick waist. I never had abs. I had a thick waist, but I had big arms and shoulders. So I go, if I wear a T-shirt with the sleeves cut off, that works perfectly. It shows off my arms. And then because I knew I'd have to wear a leather jacket, I'm a total believer in ring jackets. If you're going to be a star, you got to look like a star, which means you can't wear the same thing every day. If you notice, Sting has a million different outfits. That's part of why he looks like such a star, because Sting has the wardrobe for it. And I knew that I had to have the outfit. I mean, I knew I had to wear the leather jacket, so I couldn't change my ring jackets. Because I already had like 12 or 15 ring jackets at that point in my career, but I couldn't wear them, you know. So I was like, all right, so I'll wear a different concert shirt every week, every episode, every show. So that way, every show, I'm wearing something different, right? And people like bands, you know, and that's what I loved. I love going to concerts, and so I figured it perfect. So that hit my thick waist, hit my lack of abs. I never had a big chest, so it hit that, but it showed off my big arms and shoulders. I was like, hey, this is perfect. So I had the look, and all that with the name and everything, all that came together in like 5 minutes. Like, it was just like inspiration. It was like, bam, 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 bam. You know, and so to that, it was just like, you know, it was like divine. I just put some thought into it and the ideas popped in my head. But settling the character and putting the character together took a lot more effort. And I think Paulie understood it better than me at first. Like, he saw what I was going for, but I hadn't put it all together in my own head because I hadn't realized how much I would pull from my own life, you know, my own sadness and my own tears. And so Paulie saw where I was going ahead of me. And then after about a month or two, I figured it, like, I really realized how much I was going to pull from my own life to make this character. And then we were off to the races. But Paulie kept me in the right lane while I was, you know, developing the promos and everything, you know, like, yeah. So, I mean, it all worked out perfectly. It was great working with him.
I think you mentioned earlier about DDP, that conversation that you had, and I think I've read either him saying or you saying before that he was inspired by Patrick Swayze's character in Point Break, and another...
No, the Red Hot Chili Peppers in Point Break.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was Patrick Swayze's character because it was going to allow me to segue into my next question, which was that another guy who reminds me of that character is Brian Pillman, who you won the WCW Light Heavyweight title.
Sure.
Any Brian Pillman stories, really? That was the question.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Pillman was so fucking funny. And he cut the best locker room promos, like on The Boys. You know, he's a great guy. He was hilarious. Me, him, and Austin used to ride together. We called ourselves the Comedy Trio. And we had a comedy heavyweight champion. And everything was about just being funny, you know? So... And Austin's hilarious too. So that was really, so the car rides would be like, and Pillman used to read a vocabulary. Pillman had an amazing working vocabulary. Like one of the best, like he had words, pulled words out of his ass. I mean, like I knew what all the words meant. Like, okay, I'll give you an example, but I couldn't use them in my daily life. Like, Like he would, this is how he would literally drive to the, like after the show, Austin would be driving, I'd be in a passenger seat, and Pillman would be in the back laying down reading his vocabulary book. And then he would go, and I knew, like, but here's the funny thing is, like, he'd go, what's this word mean? And I would know what it meant, but I could never use it in a sentence. Mm-hmm. But he could use every one of those large words, you know, those huge words in a sentence. And his level of diction was amazing. And it just added to his, you know, to his promos, because he was so verbose, so witty and clever. I mean, it is a tragedy what happened. You know, it's really sad.
And before we let you go, Raven, a quick Irish, because we're obviously Irish, so a quick Irish related question. In 2005, you actually wrestled for the, I suppose, the company that came before OTT wrestling.
When?
2005, I think. You wrestled for Irish. Five.
I love the Irish accent. I think it's I think it's the most melodic accent there is. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, but we currently have an unbelievable federation called OTT. They're one of the top companies in Europe. But prior to them, we had Irish Whip Wrestling. And you wrestled with Seamus O'Shaughnessy at Seamus now in WWF in a tag team match. Yeah. Do you have any recollection of that? Clearly not.
No, I didn't even know I wrestled with him. No, I never knew. Who did I wrestle against? Was it me and him as a team?
I think
you
it was
and him
tag
as a team, I think, yeah.
And where was this?
In a place called Waterford.
Yeah, I think it was Waterford in Ireland.
Was Alex Shane on the show?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Did I ride with him?
I don't know.
No, I mean, I think that might have been a loop I took. I went on a 10-day loop with Alex Shane, and we had the best time. We just drove all over the country, show to show, you know, and just stayed on the road. Because I think we drove up north and then we drove back down.
Well, if you ever want to come to Ireland again, I know some awesome trees where we dress up as druids and
nice.
Go and hang out.
and do some mushrooms and some mushrooms and sex. Yeah. No, I don't do drugs anymore. I'd have to just spectate.
A special guest referee.
A special guest drug referee. Yeah.
Raven, it's an absolute pleasure.
Wait,
to
let me just real quick, yeah. Funny drug story. Like I don't know, but it made me think of it. I don't recommend drugs for anybody. I don't disrecommend them. I think they're dangerous, and you have to be careful. You know, I paid a large price for my bad drug habit. You know what I mean? But I'm very lucky that I came out the other side, and I don't do them anymore. And and I'm so lucky that I don't have any interest in doing them. Like most people, you know, have to go one day at a time. I don't have to do that, and I don't know why, but I'm really lucky. But you know, so when I tell drug stories, you know, it sounds like I'm glorifying it. You know how great it was, and it was, but it was also horrible. You know, so you only hear this. So people listening, you only hear the good stories, but the horrible stories are much more plentiful. After a certain point, the good times were like, you know, were like this much, and the bad times were like this much. But then the bad times become like that, and the good times become like this when the addiction becomes bad. So just, you know, so don't do it because I did it, because, you know, I wanted to be like my heroes, like Keith Richards. I wanted to be, you know, elegantly wasted. But yeah, what a dumb idea that is. It really is. But so we used to, like, after we'd go out and we'd be out all night doing ecstasy, me and Lodi, we'd come back to the house and we'd play Scoop Scrabble if we didn't pick up. And me, him, and a toad would play Scoop Scrabble. And after you have to do a scoop of GHB, and then you have to come up with a word. and the idea was to be the last person who didn't pass out at the table.
God. Wow, sounds horrific.
I don't know why I thought of that, but something made me. Well, yeah, being a referee, the drug referee made me think of that. Like, we needed a referee for that. And then else we needed a ref. One time, me and this girl and my buddy and his girl and another buddy were all in a hot tub, and we were all scooped, GHB'd up and ecstasy'd up. And we needed a lifeguard. That's what we could have used then. We needed one because people would start to nod off in the pool, and somebody was going to drown. So we had to get out of the hot tub. But Yeah, so those are the good times, but, you know, we just as easily one of us could have passed out in the hot tub and drowned, you know, so
yeah.
It, you know, it's only funny. It's only fun when you live.
That's true. 100%. That is true. You have to live to tell the tale.
Until it's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
I still have constipation issues because of all the opiates I did. My system is still messed up, and constipation sucks. Like if I go 4 times a week, it's a great week.
Jeez, I'd be hoping to go 4 times a day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd give my right nut for that. You know? Yeah, that's the.
Is that the note? Is that the note we want to end this episode on?
That's the note you want to end. Is yes. Don't become an opiate addict because you have constipation for life.
Raven,
thank you, Raven.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you.
Do you think that'll become a Hallmark card?
Yeah,
I think
I'm typing it up here as we speak. I'm going to start sending it to people.
Yeah, send me a copy. I'll personalize
get your cut as well. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Raven. An absolute pleasure to chat to you. Really, really great. So
I had a great time, man. Thank you. And I really mean it. I love the Irish accent. It's my favorite accent.
Thank you.
That and the British accent, but the Irish one is so much more melodic. It's also harder to understand, but it's so much more melodic.
Well, there you go, Niall. Raven interview. Little bit derailed.
Oh, totally derailed. That was awesome. That was awesome.
We had so many questions that we just couldn't get in there. But I think we got some good stuff. Great guy. Good to interview. Just before we recorded, he was a real nice guy. Very, very personable. And afterwards as well, he was very complimentary. So really, really nice. Thank you so much, Raven. Okay, Niall. Well, I think that's the end of the episode. I don't care how long this one runs. I think we'll leave everything in.
It all has to go in.
Yeah, uncut. So we look forward.
I don't know if we can like retroactively put an explicit warning.
We'll do something. Yeah, I don't have
to. Yeah.
Anyway, Niall, see you next week.
You're on. See you, brother.
Goodbye.
My name is Raven, professional wrestling superstar, and you're listening to Scheduled. I think that's scheduled, but in Irish, scheduled or UK, scheduled for two balls. Wait, no, two falls. I'm sorry. Scheduled for two falls with Saran Wrap Dunphy and Niall. Fuck Niall Morrissey.
Perfect. Nailed it.
Nailed it.
I didn't get to say quote the Raven nevermore.
Yeah, hit it.
Quote the Raven nevermore.